I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 5th, and we have a lot to talk about. March is MS Awareness Month, and my goal in today's episode of the podcast is to raise your awareness of rehabilitation for people living with MS. When people with MS think about rehabilitation, they often think about physical therapy. And physical therapy can be an important part of rehabilitation, but that's not even close to where today's conversation stops. I'm joined by Drs. Deborah Backus and Brad Willingham from the Shepherd Center for Multiple Sclerosis in Atlanta, Georgia, and we're talking about MS rehabilitation in the 21st century. Dr. Backus is the Vice President of Research and Innovation at the Shepherd Center. She's a researcher, physical therapist, and educator with more than 30 years of experience in the neurorehabilitation field. And Dr. Willingham is the Director of MS Research at the Shepherd Center. Dr. Willingham's work focuses on the development of innovative technologies and strategies to advance neurorehabilitation. Dr. Backus and Dr. Willingham explore and even create some of the next-level rehabilitation tools that we're going to get into during today's conversation. In a moment, we'll meet my guests, Dr. Deborah Backus and Dr. Brad Willingham. Progressive MS can have a significant, even profound effect on so many aspects of daily life, including mobility, personal care, cognitive skills, and mood. And while rehabilitation has been an important part of an MS treatment plan for many years, today's rehabilitation tools and technology are designed to enhance mobility. They can help promote safety and provide greater independence for people who are living with progressive MS. Joining me to talk about the rehabilitation tools and technology that are available today are Drs. Deborah Backus and Brad Willingham. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Dr. Backus is the Vice President of Research and Innovation at the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia. She's a researcher, physical therapist, and educator with more than 30 years of experience in the neurorehabilitation field. Dr. Willingham is a Director of MS Research at the Shepherd Center. And his work focuses on the development of innovative technologies and strategies to advance neurorehabilitation. Dr. Backus, let's start with a definition and cover some of the basics. What is rehabilitation, and why is it important to start rehab early after being diagnosed with MS?
So rehabilitation is a bundle of strategies to help restore function and health in people after conditions like MS. And it's important to start early to be able to identify where problems exist and where people might need help. We know we now have a host of disease-modifying therapies, and they can help reduce relapses and slow the progression of MS, but oftentimes symptoms still remain. Symptomatic therapy can help with some of the symptoms of spasticity and pain and fatigue, but often don't totally alleviate them. So getting assessed and finding out what rehabilitation strategies might be helpful early and across the lifespan after being diagnosed with MS can be very helpful to keep people functional and healthy.
Dr. Backus, when people think about rehabilitation, physical therapy and exercise are probably the first things that come to mind. Can you talk about other rehab therapies that are available for people living with progressive MS?
Sure. So first, I'd like to expand on the physical therapy because oftentimes people think about it only in terms of mobility, you know, walking around, or sometimes they think about it in terms of wheelchairs and adaptive equipment, but they don't often think about moving around in bed, getting safely between surfaces, getting up and down off a toilet. Those kinds of things physical therapists can help with as well, finding tools to get around in any environment. But then there's also other symptoms that people might have. They might have pain. So a physical therapist can help with managing pain, come up with strategies, whether it's stretching or massage, acupuncture. Those types of tools might be helpful. Oftentimes, people will have problems with their arms and their hands. So an occupational therapist can be very helpful because they can help them learn strategies to get stronger, to improve the sensation and dexterity in their hands so they can dress themselves, bathe themselves, feed themselves independently for as long as possible. Some people will have speech deficits. They might have trouble with articulating clearly because the muscles are affected in vocal production and voice production. So people will think of a speech language pathologist can help with that. But a speech language pathologist can also help with the cognitive deficits that can occur with MS. So whether that's, you know, slowing in the rate of processing where people can't quite put things together as quickly as they'd like, or memory deficits, or strategies for getting around in their environment, speech-language pathologists can help with that too. And there, people can get therapy for bowel and bladder dysfunction or sexual dysfunction. Almost all of the symptoms of MS can be addressed with some aspect of rehab, and it's not just about physical therapy and exercise.
Dr. Willingham, some studies have shown that about 25% of the people with MS at some point require a wheelchair. Does this disqualify them from exercising independently, or are there tools that can help them?
Yes, this is a great question because, first of all, it highlights that exercise can be safe and effective for folks across a wide range of ability levels as long as it's adapted appropriately. And there are many ways that you can engage in health-promoting physical activity while remaining in a wheelchair. For example, with resistance exercises, you can use free weights or tools such as resistance bands to engage in resistance exercises with your arms. So curling those weights up or pressing them overhead. You can even use household items that are laying around, such as soup cans or full water bottles to perform these exercises. Movements overhead may be a little more challenging. You may need some stability from a chest strap or, you know, a fitness companion. But these exercises have been shown to improve muscle size, range of motion, strength in folks living with MS. And then for aerobic exercises, those exercises that get your heart rate up, get your breathing rate up, there's also some things you can do while remaining in a wheelchair as well, such as a upper extremity ergometer or a arm cycle. This is a rehab tool that allows you to perform cycling exercise and even apply resistance to the cycle with your arms. You can also just do some arm circles or shadow boxing, even some seated dance. All of these will get your heart rate up, you know, get your breathing rate up. And there's actually a body scientific research showing that these can lead to significant improvements in heart health and metabolic health. If those options that I've listed so far may be a little bit too much too soon, you can even start with posture exercises. And so exercises where you're bringing your shoulder blades back, working on your posture, engaging your core, holding that 15, 30, 60 seconds, and then incorporate some slow, controlled breathing into there. Slow, deep breaths, really engaging those core muscles. And so there's many ways we can adapt different exercises, both in the upper extremity and the core. And with the lower extremities, there's some emerging technologies such as robotics and functional electrical stimulation that we can talk about as well to engage the leg muscles in exercise.
Let's talk about some of the rehabilitation tools available to support people with progressive MS. Foot drop is a common symptom of MS. It occurs when weakness in the ankle and foot muscles make it difficult to flex the ankle and walk. And this is a symptom that can lead to dangerous falls. Now, there are a few ways to manage foot drop. One way is by using an ankle-foot orthosis, or AFO. Dr. Backus, can you explain what an AFO is and how it can help someone experiencing foot drop?
Absolutely. It is a brace that encompasses the foot and the lower leg, and it provides support to prevent the foot drop or prevent the knee from buckling even. So sometimes it can be very rigid so that it will set the foot at an angle so that when somebody takes a step, it won't drop. It can also be set with a little bit more flexibility if somebody's a little stronger and still has muscles they can use. It can be set so that when somebody puts weight on their leg, the strap and the brace is rigid enough to prevent that knee from buckling or extending backwards into hyperextension. So it can be a very useful tool to help keep people safe.
MS isn't a one-size-fits-all disease. And so we sometimes see multiple methods designed to achieve the same or similar outcomes. Now, in the case of foot drop, functional electrical stimulation, or FES, is another potential solution. Dr. Backus, can you tell us how FES works?
Absolutely. So FES, functional electrical stimulation, is delivering stimulation to the muscles to help them contract. And the functional part means contract at the right time during a task. So it could be coupled with something like bikes, the cycle on a bike, or in the case of foot drop, it can be timed to go on during walking. So it's very simple. What we're talking about is surface electrical stimulation. There are pads that go over the muscles and are connected to a device. Those muscles can be in the thighs, the lower leg, for the foot, or for actually help at the knee. And a person can put the device on and they can walk with it and the muscles will be stimulated at the right time. So if they're starting to lift their leg, the muscles will be stimulated that lift the foot up. So that prevents the foot drop, right? Instead of that ankle foot orthosis. And or it, as they're putting weight on their leg, their thigh muscles and the back of their calves can be stimulated to prevent the knee from buckling or hyperextending. It's a great tool. It can be used to replace the function of muscles, so it can stimulate them when they're very, very weak. But it also can be used as a rehabilitation tool. So there has been research showing that people who are weak and are having trouble activating their muscles at the right time while walking, they can use these devices and eventually stop needing them because their muscles get stronger because now they're using them during walking in the right way. So it can also be a very therapeutic, a rehabilitation tool that they can use as well.
Like so many other areas of our lives, advancements in technology are changing the rehabilitation landscape and changing lives for individuals with more profound disabilities. Dr. Backus, a moment ago, I mentioned that about 25% of the people with MS will use a wheelchair for mobility. For some of them, using a manual wheelchair eventually becomes challenging. Can you tell us about the process of transitioning from a manual wheelchair to a power wheelchair with specialized seating?
Yes, absolutely. Transitioning to a power wheelchair with specialized seating requires a specialist. There are physical and occupational therapists and people who are trained to evaluate somebody to determine the right tool based on their abilities. Do they have hand function or not? So can they control a joystick or do they need to use a head control? Or there are some very innovative tools out there that people can use to control their wheelchair. They'll also look at what is the seating they need? What kind of support do they need for their trunk? You know, if they need a strap to help keep them supported, what kind of cushion do they need? They consider everything about the individual and their abilities when they're prescribing a wheelchair. They also consider the environment and how the person is going to use that wheelchair so they don't get something that they can't use in their home or in their community, something that's just going to be sitting in a corner. They require a prescription and so that they can get reimbursed for that by insurance. If somebody has just gotten a manual wheelchair, it's often very difficult to get another new wheelchair. So every insurance company is different. Oftentimes, a letter of medical necessity is needed to be able to get that new equipment, but you can. But there are also, people can also purchase scooters if they don't need something quite as elaborate. Brad likes to say, and he may say it later, start low and slow. And the same is true when you talk about mobility devices. You know, it may not be necessary to get that fully equipped one, but oftentimes it is the tool that allows people to stay functional in their everyday activities. So they don't get tired from walking or pushing a manual wheelchair. They can use their energy for the other meaningful activities in their life.
For people with progressive MS who have lost the use of their arms and or their hands, a robotic arm can be life-changing. Dr. Backus, can you tell us what a robotic arm can do and explain why this type of device is so important for people with arm and hand limitations?
In the world of research for MS, that surrounding arm and hand function is probably an underserved area. So we often will draw upon what's happening in spinal cord injury research where the impairments are very similar or stroke, brain injury. But there is evidence to show that people can use a robotic device. Typically, these robotic devices They support the elbow and the wrist and the hand. It's difficult to find one that can be in somebody's environment at home that also helps lift the arm and hand, although there are rehabilitation tools, robotic devices that can help that way. But they typically help at the elbow, wrist, and hand, and they can help people with opening and closing their hands to be able to manipulate objects, to help dress themselves, really notably to help feed themselves, hold utensils and cups and that kind of thing. But there is very little research around that. There's also, if it's okay, I'd like to mention that there's functional electrical stimulation approaches for the arm and the hand that have been shown to be beneficial in people with MS as well. So instead of a robotic device, which for some people might be necessary, they could use stimulation in a very similar way to what I talked about for the ankle and the knee, or for being on a cycle, to stimulate their muscles for reaching out and grasping things. And sometimes that can be a very valuable tool and less intrusive than a robotic device.
A robotic arm sounds like it's going to be expensive. Is this something covered by insurance, or are there patient assistance programs for people who can benefit from this kind of technology?
Yeah, so that's typically not something right now, with the evidence base not being large and really strong. It's not something that's typically covered by insurance, but, you know, people can access things like the National MS Society has some support for people. Oftentimes there are state programs that can help provide support for people, but it's an area that requires some more work, some more research, and some more support to show the benefits for people with MS.
When we talk about progressive MS, I think a lot of people tend to think and sometimes focus on mobility issues, but progressive MS can also make it really difficult to operate the small tech devices that people use every day, the kinds of devices that require fine motor movements like smartphones, tablets, even a desktop PC. Now, the good news is that voice-activated systems can make many things more accessible for the individuals who face these kinds of challenges. Dr. Willingham, can you talk about some common voice-activated systems that people can use? Maybe share some examples of how this technology can help people with MS.
Absolutely. Voice-activated technologies can be very helpful in overcoming barriers and promoting accessibility. And with today's technology, many of these voice-activated systems are built into our mobile phones, our devices, tablets, smart TVs, and even our desktop computers. So right out of the box, these devices are oftentimes already equipped with voice-activated systems that allow you to set reminders, or write text messages, write emails, make phone calls, or even in the case of a desktop computer, open up programs and operate programs just with voice activation. And so there's many ways that these voice systems are promoting accessibility in the digital domain. But what's really interesting is more recently, we've seen these voice-activated systems start to transition into the physical domain. And so with the development of smart home systems, such as, you know, the Amazon Echo, the Google Home, the Apple HomePod, these systems are now voice-activated systems that can connect to smart light bulbs, smart light switches, locks, thermostats, a wide range of pieces of hardware and appliances in the home that may be associated with accessibility issues. There are barriers associated with operating small buttons, switches, locks, clasps, or their areas of the home that may be, you know, not as accessible. You can use these smart home systems to by voice command, turn on lights, lock doors, climate control your home. So there's many ways from the digital domain to the physical domain that these voice systems are promoting accessibility.
Dr. Willingham, if someone is interested in setting up a voice-activated system in their home, where do they start?
Absolutely. There's a lot out there, and there's different digital ecosystems, as they say, you know, the Amazon, Google, Apple ecosystem, and there's a lot to get caught up in. And so I might recommend, you know, starting with the need, you know, go through your day-to-day, identify, you know, where those trouble points are, where those barriers are, where you have accessibility challenges in your day-to-day activities. Is it setting reminders? Is it composing emails? Or is it more, you know, accessing that certain room of your home or your thermostat or operating a specific lock? Then once you identify the barrier, and find the technical solution that fits that need. And so whether it's, you know, in the digital domain or the hardware domain, find a system that provides a solution. And then you might want to consider, is this solution compatible with what I already use? If you already have, you know, Apple phone or a Google system that you prefer to use, you might want to consider operating in that same ecosystem to just give yourself a little continuity with the user experience. And then, you know, with respect to starting low and going slow, you may want to start with, you know, practicing these dictations, these voice commands on your smartphone, maybe getting a countertop smart speaker, trying some of the commands, you know, setting reminders, asking about the weather, you know, just kind of feeling out what types of commands are preferred by the system, and then start integrating those more complex hardware pieces, smart lights, smart locks. And eventually you'll be scheduling everything by voice and seeing the full power of these accessible technologies.
Dr. Willingham, it's hard to talk about technology today without AI making its way into the conversation. So I'm wondering, is AI being used in rehab tools? And if it is, what's the potential benefit for people with progressive MS?
Yes, all the buzz around AI. I mean, growing up, I wasn't involved in data science, so I always thought AI would come to us in the form of robots that look like us and talk like us, and that very well may be. But it's important to know that AI is actually being used right now, and it's a little bit more behind the scenes and maybe in ways you might not think. So one of the things AI does best is it has an ability to ingest large amounts of information and extract meaning from that information and identify patterns in large data sets. And so this is particularly important to today's rehabilitation in healthcare, because we have access to so many different types of digital health technologies that are generating immense amounts of data. So between wearable sensors and telehealth platforms and electronic medical records, we now have ways to assess patients' needs and their preferences and monitor their progress at a new level in ways we never thought was possible. So there's a lot of potential there, but it's a little overwhelming on the other side. All this data is coming at you from all these different directions. It's difficult to make sense of it. How do we use it? And so some of our work here at Shepherd Center and at other laboratories, looking at how we can use AI to integrate large amounts of health information and go through the health data and extract meaning from that and identify patterns in that. And what we're finding is that this application of AI is allowing us to determine this treatment might be better for this patient. We might expect this outcomes for this patient, but not this patient. So it's allowing us to use our resources more efficiently in terms of, you know, designing a care path. But also on the predictive side, it's allowing us to identify issues before they become more severe problems. So, you know, escalating issues, hey, we might need to, you know, take action sooner. And this can prevent, you know, further problems down the road and allow earlier intervention. So yeah, those are some of the ways AI is making a difference right now and leading to more predictive and personalized medicine.
Dr. Willingham, we've already covered an awful lot of ground today, and it's clear that there are lots of tools and technologies that can be useful to people living with MS. How should someone go about determining whether one of these tools is right for them?
Yeah, I mean, similar to the model laid out for the voice-activated systems, just, you know, start with the need. You know, assess your day, assess your trouble points, what are the barriers, start with the need and work backwards to the solution. As mentioned, there's a lot out there. We have an overwhelming access to information about what's out there and what's the latest and greatest. It's easy to get caught up on that. But sometimes the solution may be more simple. It may not be the most high-tech solution. And so it's important to start with the barrier, start with the problem, find a solution that works for you. And then again, you know, ease your way in. You know, try out a solution, maybe try out a few solutions, find out what's best for you, what fits in your current daily life and your workflow. And then also asking around. So as we know, when we start using technology, it almost immediately just comes a part of our everyday life. We may not even, you know, realize we're using it. And so I encourage folks to ask their providers or ask someone with a shared lived experience, hey, are you aware of a technology solution that may help me with this barrier, this point of inaccessibility in my daily life or my care path? And it may bring something to their attention. Oh, yeah, I actually use this app or I use this tool. And so, yeah, using that crowdsourcing mechanism is a great way to discover new technologies as well.
Since you both focus on innovative technology every day, I'm hoping you'll each share what you're working on right now and maybe give us a preview of something that we may soon see that people with MS can look forward to. Dr. Backus?
So we really focus on a couple of different areas. One is underserved populations with MS, and that includes people with progressive MS who are very understudied in terms of what interventions would be helpful to them. So we really look to think about how to apply innovative technologies for this population. And one of those tools is functional electrical stim. And so we are evaluating the effectiveness of functional electrical stimulation interventions, FES interventions. We're also working with industry partners to further develop those interventions to have them be even more effective for more people. And so that's something that's very exciting to us. We're also partnering with other people in other communities to extend those FES interventions, so that more people can use them. And then we're also working with creative or innovative platforms that deliver content to people anywhere in the world. We know not that everybody has access to a Shepherd Center or the other MS centers in the United States. There's very few of them. There's people in rural communities and there's people around the world who don't have access. So we're working with an innovative online platform that delivers on-demand and live classes, and not just exercise classes. And those exercise classes, it's pretty cool. They're not just for people who can stand and lift heavy weights. They're also for people who need the wheelchair exercises that Brad has mentioned before. But also mindfulness and meditation, cognitive exercises, educational tools. And so we're very excited because we're partnering with different people in different communities to try to extend these opportunities for people with MS. And then Brad can tell you some of the other cool things that he's doing with these technologies.
Okay, Dr. Willingham, can you give us a little peek behind the curtain?
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things going on, some of which Debbie just mentioned, very high impact projects with a lot of potential. So one of the key problems we've been looking to address in the MS research program is that the advancement for care for people with MS, particularly progressive MS, is limited by the lack of tools that allow us to measure changes in health and function over time in the real world on a daily basis. And so we have a lot of great tools in the clinic, but these tools, they require supervision, they require expensive equipment, they can only capture a snapshot in the here and now what's going on. So this makes it difficult to capture meaningful changes that occur between visits, and it can take several months or years to detect changes in disease course or progression of a symptom before it comes to our attention. So if we have less ability to capture changes, this may also slow down research progress. So we may need larger sample sizes, research projects may take longer, and so it may slow down the advancement of scientific discovery. So as a solution, we're working with some industry partners to develop some novel digital health technologies. Particularly, we're looking at some emerging wearable sensors and some intelligent data systems that can allow us to comprehensively evaluate a patient's needs, abilities, and their progress on a day-to-day basis in real-world environments. And so creating tools that have this high acuity of detection and this real-world relevance can help us, identify when, symptom progression tends to get worse. We can take action earlier. We can treat issues before they become more severe problems. And this can also allow us to, expedite research studies and perform research quicker and therefore accelerate scientific discovery and advance care for folks living with MS.
Doctors Deborah Backus and Brad Willingham, thank you for all you do to improve the quality of life for people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been fun.
Thank you, John. It was a pleasure to be a part of the program. Thank you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/340. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.